Hey guys, welcome to episode 256 of the podcast. I hope you all enjoyed Boys of Summer as much as I did. I am very excited to head back into interviews with wonderful, wonderful ladies, and I can't think of a better person to start out with than Anna Fields. You may not be aware of her in the sense that she isn't, you know, a star of a television show. But the reason that I think that she is such a great person to ring back in the ladies with is that she is working on multiple documentaries, already has a great book out called The Girl in the Show, and has done other projects prior to this that also are fantastic. So The Girl on the Show, we talk about it a fair amount in the interview coming up here in the conversation, but it is really giving kind of an amazing account of what it's like to be a woman in comedy. So it just feels like Anna is our ambassador back into all ladies. And so I hope you enjoy the episode. I think you will. It's a nice longy. And I think that's it for the time being. Shout out wise, I just wanted to thank Hassan and Sarai for your emails. And I will get caught up on some other shout outs soon. But in the meantime, I hope you are all having a wonderful September. And I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I don't know why I didn't just include that part when I was talking to you about let me start with the intro where I say thanks for waiting while I went and put on deodorant. That is a classy statement.
Yeah.
It's classy in that I did put on deodorant.
Well, what's classier than that? You smelled nice before and you smell nice now.
Anna, thank you. I also appreciate that, someone was just teasing me about this. Like when you're like, when someone's like, hey, and they go in to hug you and you say, I'm really sweaty. But, and then they feel they have to continue with the hug, even though they probably shouldn't. Yeah. So they still do. And then it's just like a sort of like, oh, why did we do
especially
this?
Especially if they're
but
nice
I don't feel
clothes.
That way. Like if I want to hug someone and they say they're sweaty, I will either not hug them or I'm still going in for the straight up hug.
It.
I'm on
gotcha.
my hand. If it makes a spongy sound, like a, I'm okay with it. But I wouldn't. Wow. I wouldn't categorize how sweaty you were as you weren't in
Thanks.
Full.
I tried
full
to take breaks. I tried to take breaks on my way up so that I would be like, you know, every time I felt myself becoming truly drip worthy, I was like, I want to just find a shady tree and give Janet a potential break.
Smart. It's really been toasty, and I was at Dragon Con for the weekend, but before that, you know, we had the whole, like, I guess this happens every couple of years where it'll get so hot that my neighborhood loses power. There's a wildfire. Like, there's that, the wildfires, there's that happens
frequently
here.
I heard about the fire,
here.
But I used to live in LA years ago, and then I moved to New York to go to grad school. So I haven't been back for so long. There weren't as many fires then, I feel.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Probably.
That was like 2005.
Yeah. I think that's probably true, although I just don't know. I mean, I guess I won't go into like global warming and stuff because obviously it's extremely real. But I also know that at any given time, we're constantly breaking records. Like, it feels like it's like, oh, record breaking cool. Oh, record breaking hot. So I know that that's all part and parcel
to
the big stuff that's going on.
How many 100-year, 500-year
storms can we have? Exactly.
It's been 12 years and we've had three.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I first moved to LA, it was like Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
The first time in 100 years has ever happened, or 500 years has ever happened. And now it's happened three times since I watched that film footage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
good times.
Anyway. Comedy show.
Let's all become Jehovah's Witnesses. That's fresh in my mind because of the recent, I guess it was a recent This American Life where someone was talking about their experience being a Jehovah's Witness. And I didn't know much about that religion. And maybe I had tangentially heard and then promptly forgotten that there are really some interesting similarities between Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. And but you Mormons grew up love Mormons. Half. I mean, sort okay. of on
Your mom,
the Mormon
right?
on Sunday, yeah.
According to my research.
According to all your deep, deep research.
I know, I feel creepy. I mean, I just
well, that's
I like to
your
do
job. You're working. Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't want to make you feel like, oh, I've been stalking you. I just don't want to interview anybody before the film
sure.
without knowing something about them.
Which is almost exactly the opposite yeah. of what I try to do, because I try to ask all the questions I shouldn't know the answers to in right. the moment, but I feel that sometimes that's worked in my favor and sometimes it hasn't. So it's a trade-off. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I just like to make people feel like I've paid attention to them.
Well, I think that's, you know what I mean? That's huge. That's, yeah. I mean, I think that's absolutely
so
the appropriate thing to do.
I didn't just ask you randomly.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? No. So, I 100% think yeah. that's the right way to go. And yeah. if I truly don't know a person that but the chances that someone's coming on my podcast yeah. are
podcasts
slimmer
are totally
than,
different from documentary
yeah.
films.
But totally boy, oh boy, that makes a huge difference, sure. I think, to the person who is, yeah, who's coming yeah. in cold. I mean, that's the sort of biggest joke about when people do press, which is different than doing a documentary or doing a little, you know, being
right.
a book, yeah. Be part of a book. But yeah, the whole thing of where someone's like, so, I mean, you can really tell the difference. Speaking on the other side of it, I can sure tell the difference when someone's like, so. Wow. Anyway, so what's your favorite role? You're like, oh, you don't know anything about me at all. And
I hate that shit.
Yes, that's
it's awful.
Yay, but it's so kind of a weird feeling.
And I probably
feeling.
Get too into it. I'm like, oh, she studied interior design for a brief moment in college.
I'll talk about it all day long, so no worries.
I'm like, oh,
no
maybe I should
worries.
Stop.
Yeah.
It comes from a place of really wanting to get the facts correct.
Absolutely.
And in our current... perhaps post-truth era.
Yeah. No,
feel
it feels
like
more important than ever.
Really important for
and,
me.
And it does, yeah. It really does become like, well, I guess I can't control anybody but me
right.
in some ways.
Right.
So what's my contribution going to
yes.
be? It really does feel like sort of microcosm times.
It does.
Of,
and honestly, because you and so many other ladies were so generous to even show up and be vulnerable and say, just answer honestly.
Yeah.
I felt like I owed it to you to like ask questions that were coming from a place of superficiality and
sure.
not understanding your journey. And,
sure, sure.
You know, and why you would even be right for this conversation.
Right. Well, let's explain to yeah. my listeners who may not know yeah. what we're talking about, how
yeah.
we met, and what project you were
it's
working
like hard
on. Because I
at
think
because you're so pretty.
Oh, good.
It's really
heavens.
Hard.
Good
it's
heavens.
It's really hard.
if you merely touched my greasy hair,
oh.
and you would be like, wait, no. It's
greasy.
Only it's not skin deep, it's grease deep. How beauty
feel
is
like
only
I'm back
grease
in high school
deep.
And I'm having a really like once in a lifetime cafeteria conversation with the popular pretty girl and I'm like, she's talking to me,
which I categorically was not.
I just feel like, oh, she's talking to me, what do I say? What's she gonna
even
ask
though
me?
We already told it's a, even though we comfortably already have had more than one conversation
when I'm in the director when I'm like when I'm behind the camera. And it's not about what I have to say. It's about what you have to say.
Right, right.
Totally different personality.
Yeah, well, that makes
you know
sense.
What I mean?
That totally makes sense.
I'm
but
not
I,
a performer
my
at
version
all.
Of, but even me, and I've said this before, but I don't know how many times I can say, if yeah. I'm like at a show that I'm not a part of,
yeah.
I don't want to be a part of it. I get really uncomfortable. Like if it was a magic show or something and someone wanted to volunteer or someone, if there's just a, you know, when I'm participating as a viewer, as an attendee, I am so comfortable in that place, and I'm so uncomfortable if someone breaks that
no
agreement.
Audience participation.
Do you know
you.
What I mean? So
yeah.
even for me, so even for performers, you know, there's no like hard and fast rule
you're
of like,
I didn't sign up
I'm
for this.
Always ready to perform. I'll always take the call.
Well,
do you
that's
know what
why
I mean?
You're not a psychopath.
Well, maybe that's true.
I mean, it's like if you're always
maybe
on, like
true.
Give your neural cortex a little bit of a break.
Yeah, your neural anyway, cortex.
I'm a,
just
I
give
was
it
a neuroscience major
give it
in
a
college.
Massage. Okay, so you and I met because you reached out to me because you were working on a project.
Yes.
And I'll let you explain.
Sure. Well, I mean, I've been working on it for 4 years. It's called The Girl in the Show. And gosh, I'm going to try and nutshell this. It's essentially first a documentary, and then I was lucky enough to sell it as a book as well, which allowed me to use so much more of the research that can't be filmed about the intersection between feminism and quote-unquote women's comedy, although I really hate that term because it's very gender segregating,
right?
In my opinion. It's just
right.
comedy. You're just comedians.
Right.
There's
well,
no slow lane or separate other categories.
Right.
right. We don't say lady doctor anymore.
No, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, I happen to like lady doctor. No, for sure. But I think that's something that, and you and I think talked about this a little bit together, which is, it's such a sign of the times. And by the way, you don't have to nutshell this because nothing in my podcast has ever been a nutshell. If anything,
it
becomes becomes an orchard.
It could be like a 4-year long.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also an incredibly meaningful 4-year long process and project. That's really hard to nutshell. But I mean, like that's where it gets tricky, right? Is that we want to be in a place where we don't have to use those qualifiers, but the significance of using them is also a way of needing to have a conversation about the fact that we're still using them. So it's a little bit around, and those are the kinds of arguments that people are getting into right now, mm-hmm. particularly with respect to race and still gender, mm-hmm. and certainly how those things play into class or not about class.
Everything is everything.
You know, everything is everything. Yeah. There's the same conversation when people ask me about the cartoon character I had and
Cora.
the meaningful aspect of mm-hmm. the fact that she, you know, ends the series falling in love with a female friend of hers, mm-hmm. That, you know, like, I'm so excited that it won't be even a thing in, you know, a decade longer, maybe less. Mm-hmm. But I also want to give it the weight that it deserves and have that conversation, because the reality is it was a big deal. And it is it's still a big deal to talk about
and
women in comedy, because
it's not. That's not the only character you've played that's broken those boundaries or even addressed those boundaries.
Right, right.
And that's what I feel like. Why I thought you might be someone who could contribute to this conversation is that you're coming at your performances from a place of sort of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but just from the research that I've done, I never felt like, even from Dinner and a Movie to now, it's not as if you came from a place of sort of strict heteronormative norms and then moved into something that you felt would be more lucrative. You sort of always just sort of took, which sometimes happens.
Right.
You just sort of took characters that spoke to you, regardless of what their sexual orientation was. And I felt like that would be such a risky move, I feel like, for the past women in comedy, quote unquote, that I was talking about. So especially given that I can only imagine the sort of extra level of expectation that's put upon people who are exceptionally attractive. And so I cannot even imagine how much pressure there must be for someone to conform.
Yeah, I think part of that is just, that's what's great about, wait a minute, this has become about me and you're doing your project now, and I'm not going to let this, let it stand.
It's not on purpose. I'm used to focusing on you.
No, of course. But that was very sly.
I'm sorry. It wasn't sly. It's not intentional. It's been your life for four years.
Yeah. I totally get it.
I can change the subject.
I will address one thing, which is that.
But you're one of the girls in the show, so it's almost like it's about both of us.
Okay, this is a continuation of, and if you're interested in what we're talking about, then you absolutely should get the book. And with the documentary,
and you're in the film too.
And when is the film? I haven't seen the film, but I have the book.
Yes,
obviously.
So, here's the thing that's funny. I'll just start with where I got the idea. So I was always a fan of Gilda Radner and Lily Tomlin. I used to do Roseanne Dana impersonations and Lily Tomlin's fish face for my mother growing up. I was an only child too. And my mother suffered from some pretty severe mental illness. Mm-hmm. And so this is how I got her to laugh. Mm-hmm. And when I was at the Austin Film Festival in 2013, I was there getting an award for a script I'd written. And I rewatched the pilot episode of Saturday Night Live from 75. And because I'm kind of nerdy, I started sort of Googling trivia. And I found this sort of half myth, half truth about how the not ready for primetime players in The Lemmings, which included like Harold Ramis and John Belushi and Gilda, they eventually became part of the first cast of Saturday Night Live. They used to get butts in the seats by announcing that there was a girl in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, like, arguably 25 years after Elaine May co-created improv, it was still a novelty to have a girl in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought to myself, I wonder if it's still the same for the girls in the show. And it started to be just about Gilda. And then it became about all the women who made Gilda Gilda and all the women who Gilda sort of
in some way made. And then it became not just improv, but also stand-up and also comedic acting. And it became everything is everything.
Yeah.
You know, and what they speak about, how speaking came about, how voices even mattered from 1920. Prior to 1920, women's voices didn't matter on a national scale, and certainly not on a political scale.
Yeah.
Because before the passage of the 19th Amendment, nobody cared what we thought or said, because we couldn't vote against or for anything, so who cared?
Or the argument would be made, those conversations were happening in homes and perhaps were informing things on a deeper level than anyone wanted to admit.
Absolutely.
But even that was just like, if in every house, quote unquote, every household, every quote unquote normal household, which was more important back then to be, if the front facing side of the society is so masculine centric, then it's like, then the power that a woman has over a man is like an uncomfortable joke.
Yes.
But like they have this influence, but then there's this constant push and pull of like, oh, I respect this partner of mine, but also I'm supposed to be in charge of her. But also she's saying really smart things, but they have to be my smart. I mean, what a clusterfuck.
It's exhausting to have to be manipulative all the time on either side.
Yeah.
So with the passage of the 19th Amendment, women started to matter and their voices started to matter on any political, legal, economic sense nationally. Suddenly we had to listen to 51% of the population. At that time we were technically more because of the ravages of World War I. So we started to matter, and so people started to sort of have to pay attention to us.
Yeah.
So we had to start thinking about what we were saying and how we were saying it. And so from vaudeville to that sort of first wave of post-amendment, post-suffrage comedians, what they started doing and when and how and about what they were doing suddenly became more scrutinized.
Yeah.
And so you'll see a change between women before 1920 and how bawdy they were on stage in vaudeville and what they were allowed to do. Sometimes it was more.
Like the Mae West types or
Sophie Tucker, Belle Barth, Pert Kelton, who was the original Alice Cramden from The Honeymooners before she was blacklisted by McCarthy for playing a bawdy prostitute on vaudeville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a little bit too risque.
That was a rough era.
Yeah, it was. But it's very sine cosine wave. So it's like 1920, oh yay, we're liberated. It's the Harlem Renaissance. Let's get this shit. And then it's like, oh crap, World War II. Oh, we've got to all be Americans now. What does it mean to be an American now?
Right.
Oh, we better conform. We've got these ideals of moving to the suburbs. And then 60s and 70s, it's back to, oh, let's rebel against that stuff. And then, oh no, it's Reagan, back to the 80s. We better go underground and start being more conformist. And then the 90s. So this just this up and down roller coaster of what's okay and what's not okay for women to say, and especially openly, and how they present themselves physically.
Mm-hmm.
And
where would you put us now in that, in the sort of action reaction? Because obviously you can look at it from just a presidential point of view and say, you know, okay, well, this is the Obama administration, this is the Trump administration, but at the same time, that's like kind of a surface level, like it's hard to, because then if you really drill down into what that administration, like it's not like the Obama administration meant suddenly there was, we all had privacy again, or suddenly we weren't bombing anyone, or suddenly, you know what I'm saying? So
specifically Obama degraded some of the First Amendment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I'm a lawyer, so this is really fascinating for me as well.
Yeah.
It's
strange time. So in that way, you know, or is it only possible to really see those waves when they're behind you? Like, will we look at, like, what will we, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because what will we look at? Exactly.
It's just about what the culture values versus what the culture is attempting to devalue, and what we collectively decide we want to express versus repress.
Right.
And sometimes that is sometimes mirrored in whoever happens to be the commander in chief at the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better exemplified by what's on our television screens. Sometimes it's better exemplified by what our legislature is doing, what our Supreme Court is doing.
Right.
Because certainly during the very arguably repressive 1950s and early 1960s, I mean, I hate to get too legal with you, but like it was an era of the Supreme Court called the Warren Court.
Oh, I'm fascinated. All I listen to is true crime and legal podcasts. Cool. That's my escape. Okay, well, I don't listen to comedy podcasts. Okay. I'm like, oh, that's my friend world. That's my work life. So I escape by listening to Undisclosed and finding out about
the Warren Court was all about
I get it.
The Warren Court was all about like creating the things that we now consider intrinsic to mm-hmm. the fabric of American judiciary.
Yep.
And civil liberties as they exist today were created between 1953 and 1974. So very many of those years were spent in the Vietnam era. Many of those years were not spent in an incredibly progressive time mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those civil liberties, for example, Miranda rights that we now hold
right.
so dear,
right.
did not exist before this time period
yeah.
at all.
Isn't that something?
I know.
And when did, and some, even things like, I mean, obviously what, not obviously, but for anybody who it follows the kind of stuff that I follow in the podcasting world, like so much is about Brady anymore. Like, so, because all of the sort of post, everything that happens post conviction yeah. hinges so much on like what was disclosed and what the responsibility is and how many people are innocent, how many people are guilty. What does our judicial system look like? How are we going to unbreak that? Because yeah. it's become so much about, because everything is everything, because it's become so much about mm-hmm. more than just, you know, what's sitting on a piece of paper. Like, well, you know,
yeah.
ideally this is what we're looking at. Right. And then like anything that's on a piece of paper, it becomes perverted mm-hmm. by people who have the best intentions and by people who have the worst intentions.
The pendulum swings both ways.
Yeah, certainly. Absolutely.
You know, and so legal interpretation is the basis for some of our greatest national progresses.
Yeah.
Some of our greatest treasures came not from what was literally written.
Yeah. Or what people voted on, but what a select group of people said, this is a very specific situation that we have to make a determinant. Mm-hmm. And because of the way we've set things up, that will now inform
yeah.
all of these things that follow.
There are so many people in this country who would have no legal representation, economic representation, or political representation had it not been for judicial activism.
Right. But we could probably step that up a little.
Yeah.
Now.
A little bit.
I guess that's what everyone's trying to do.
Either way, we can be tearing right. down things that are great actively, or right. we can be building up things that create and further our ideals towards life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right.
But anyway.
Well, so okay, let me, yeah.
about the girl on the show, because it starts with 1920 and it goes to the present. And it talks about these sine cosine waves of how does history and culture and feminism interact in the comedy that we love.
Right.
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 And how far do we still have to go?
Right.
You know, how do we become more intersectional? How do we bring more laughter into this crazy world that we're living in? How do we use laughter to cope? How do we use laughter to change?
Yeah.
How do we use laughter to feel less alone in an arguably isolating technological revolution
mm-hmm.
that has us all sitting behind screens rather mm-hmm. than interacting with our neighbors?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know, maybe I'm just a really old lady now, but as part of like, I mean, I'm a millennial, but I'm an older millennial. And so I feel like I'm part of the last generation that remembers what it was really like to... Or last part of the millennial generation that really remembers what it was like to substantively not have the internet in your life on a daily basis.
Yes.
And not have smartphones and not have instant access and instant connection.
Yes.
And I remember driving around LA with a Thomas guide in my
Me
mind.
Too. Me
right,
too.
Right.
Yeah. Or MapQuest. I mean, MapQuest right. was like a huge deal. Printing out like 6 pages of MapQuest directions is very much a part of coming down
and
here.
And that's maybe a good change.
Right.
But there are other not so good changes.
Yeah.
Better, so some for better, some for worse. And so I just want to make people feel like what comedy makes them feel like, which is in that moment when you're all getting it in the room and you're laughing, you're not alone because everybody knows what the point is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The way in which we connect with each other has changed. And I think some of it is like, again, it's a much bigger conversation, but, using the eclipse as an example, you know, having some sort of big event that you are not necessarily experiencing with all of the other people who are getting to experience it, yeah. but there's something large enough about it that it feels good to know that, you know, you're having this sense of wonder. And the way that that gets shared later, whether it's Instagram or, you know, in the case of Radiolab, they did a little piece on it and they had a bunch of listeners send in their aural reactions to it.
I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
I'm trying to listen.
You're too kind. You're too kind.
I'm so sorry that I interrupted this. It's really hard. I'm just having like PTSD from middle school.
Oh, God. I just can't
really
tell
sorry.
You enough how much I don't agree
so
with
sorry.
Anything that you're saying right now.
I'm such a douchebag.
No, but they said they had their listeners send in their reactions to it, and because I had the very wonderful opportunity to see the total solar eclipse, and it was a very emotional experience for me. It is so accessible now. When I hear someone else's reaction, I just start crying in the best way. All of which is to say, we can still connect. And sometimes our technology helps us do that rather than hinders it. It's just a matter of like taking a step back and looking at all of those things and kind of being maybe more selective about how we engage in person and how we engage remotely and how we allow that divider to happen rather than using it to our advantage to feel closer to someone, I guess, is what I'm trying
totally
to say.
I totally agree with you. And I, you know, and that's so true. It's so, there's so, there's pros and cons to everything. It's not like the 80s was the era of eye contact.
Right.
It's just, you know, I wasn't very old in the 80s, so I don't really remember.
But
the thing is, though, and maybe, of course, we look back with rose-colored glasses and we're forgetting the bad stuff, too. But at least in the book and in the film, I take a look at how women were threatened and encouraged over the time periods. You know, where now you'll have a comedian being, you know, threatened with a rape, you know, joke, or not even a joke, a real rape threat or a threat of violence on Twitter. It used to be that comedians would do a set and maybe say something a little risque and then come home and find a hole cut in their door.
Right.
So I don't know. Physical safety, social media safety.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some people would argue that social media safety is less of a threat. You know, that's less of a threat being threatened on Twitter. But the thing is, though, because all of our information is on the internet, I don't know. Having a hole cut in your door of a hotel room that you're in,
Right. Is
that less safe than having someone literally broadcast to millions of people what your home address
is? Well, sure, sure.
You can leave your hotel room. I don't know if you can move your entire house.
Right, right.
I don't know. I mean, I just don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Well, speaking of house, I just want to ask where you grew up.
Oh, North Carolina.
Okay.
It used to be cool. Now it's embarrassing.
Oh, well, speaking of the pendulum, I mean, I think that's another one where...
We used to be a big blue state. We were in 2012.
Yeah.
With the notable exception of our wonderful governor, Roy Cooper.
Yeah.
Our legislature is pretty big shit show right now. Uh-huh. I mean, I guess I'm just...
I'm from Arizona, so I understand.
Oh, wow.
Because my sense of Tucson, which is very liberal. But that's, I mean, it's like living in Austin or, you know, I mean, you
for
can.
For some reason,
I
thought you were from Florida.
No, God, no. I'm sorry, Florida. Well, I really don't mean that in a God, no way. It's just a very different place.
I might need to correct my
research. Okay. Yeah, definitely not from Florida. No, I'm from Arizona, but although I will say that Floridians suffer from the same fate that many of us have when you're from a state where, you know, my upbringing was incredibly liberal and I lived in a city that is blue, but
a red state,
yeah. And so that's a very, I think my sort of optimistic side is like, you know, people know that there's plenty of progressive people living in North Carolina. I don't think that...
Do people know that?
I think so.
People know that.
I think so.
Because we are a rare but mighty group.
No, absolutely. I think they do. I mean, maybe somebody who didn't have an opinion one way or the other about North Carolina and is hearing about it for the first time in the context of this, these times in the last couple of years might have a different opinion, but I don't know. As somebody who is somebody who did not grow up in the South... The people that I know have very positive associations with both North and South Carolina.
I'm glad.
Well, maybe less South Carolina. Let me just be honest.
Wow, you are so nice. I'm glad to hear that. I normally experience the opposite reaction. Mm. I am really glad to hear that because I will say this. The North Carolina that I grew up in, under Governor Jim Hunt, was pro-education.
Yeah.
That's why UNC Chapel Hill became such a great school.
Well, sure.
Yeah, I mean, the people I grew up with what
city or town were you living in?
I grew up in a little town called Burlington, like the coat factory. Uh-huh. We're more than just
what
great
a claim
coats.
To fame.
Right. And then I went to girls boarding school in Winston-Salem.
Okay.
Which no one has ever heard of unless you smoke a lot, I guess.
We love cigarettes. God knows we love cigarettes.
I know, and furniture.
Uh-huh.
High Point Furniture.
There you go.
But Chapel Hill and Asheville are the big blue. Well, Charlotte too now.
Yeah.
But yeah, they, I mean, our state in the 90s and early 2000s, I would say, was super, super blue.
Yeah.
And big Bill Clinton supporters, very big on education. And there was
a Let me say, I was shocked when this happened, and that's a good thing. It's not like you were like, oh, Alabama, you guys got to get it together again.
Right.
You know.
And then, I mean, we were never sort of in the pools of low expectations.
Yeah.
And now I feel that we are.
Well, I think that's going to correct itself.
Yeah, I mean, everything bounces.
Yeah.
The pendulum swings. Hopefully we can address our gerrymandering issue. Again, with the boring legal stuff, the Fourth Circuit has specifically struck down our racially motivated with precision lines gerrymandering case, forcing our legislature to redraw those. They keep trying to put it off. They keep trying to wait. That has been denied. Thank goodness that will change soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, the only reason I bring all this up is that I do have a part of the book that goes into Roe versus Wade and why it was so seminal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think a lot of women or men learn a lot about history that's not about Caucasian, heterosexual, cisgendered men that are certain of a certain socioeconomic status.
Right.
So I don't think that a lot of women know that until 1974, women could be legally denied the right to have credit or checking accounts.
Right.
And they would have to have male cosigners. So you would have to ask like your little brother or your son to co-sign for you for your creditworthiness.
So
and I don't think that you know. I don't think we take this for granted because we don't know how recent it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was born the year that women started to count.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they gained citizenry.
Yeah.
And if you think about that, that's three generations of mattering
That's not much. That's right. That's absolutely right.
So I just, the backlash of this idea that like, we're all feminazis and we're all taking over. And, you know, I just give us 40,000 years and then we can have a conversation about how we're taking over.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I understand. And I don't disagree with that at all. How aware of that stuff
were
you
when you were than I am.
Not in the, that couldn't be
more
wrong.
Because you're like, I'm angry, but I know that I got to check that anger because it's alienating to people. It doesn't necessarily move the conversation forward. You have you have some really wonderful comments in the film. P.S. It's going to be a couple films now.
Oh, good.
Because there's so much great response and I have so much great footage that I'm going to have to split it up.
Sure.
There's going to be another book and another film.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, listen, anyway, based on what we've sort of skimmed across the surface of, it's obviously a very, very dense, I mean, you could encyclopedic,
here.
But, so when you were growing up at a girl's bar, what kind of climate was your home life and how did that lead to boarding school? Was that something that was common in your community?
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that something that was common? Because like, for example, for me, no one I knew went to boarding school. Boarding school to me was like a thing in Jane Austen novels when I was growing up. That was not something, I didn't have East Coast friends that went to boarding, you know, that was all something that I found out about much later in my life. Of course, I had a sense that existed. But again, it just was not at all something that was in front of me
in any way. For sure. It's very English.
Yeah.
And it's historical traditions.
Yeah.
Well, once again, I'm an only child. I don't even have any cousins. It's just me. I always made this joke that I was like the stand holding up the Christmas tree.
Uh-huh.
It's like all these people. And then I'm just the thing. So anyway, it's a lot of pressure.
Have some kids, quick.
I know. Have some babies.
Yeah.
Or as my uncle likes to say, birthing babies is where it's at. So apparently I have nothing of where it's
at. Great. You're not at there.
I'm not at there. So I actually put myself into boarding school because I grew up in a very small town where, I was always sort of the bookish kid and that was not common.
Mm-hmm.
I am super fair skinned and, that was not common. You would think it would be, but everybody was tan and everybody was really athletic. And I was like the kid who was dreading running the mile
that you
had to do in middle school.
Sure.
I was also really short for my age for a while. And then all of a sudden I went from like 5'2 to like 5'7 in like a year. It was crazy. So anyway, I really wanted to go to Brown
for college mm-hmm. because I'd watched my best friend's wedding with Julia Roberts. Uh-huh. And she was wearing a brown t-shirt. Uh-huh. And I thought you had to go to the school to get the t-shirt. I thought you had to go there. I was like 14. So I didn't know wonderful. You could just get the t-shirt.
Yeah.
Because of course, this was like the beginnings of the internet. And of course, for people who lived in bigger towns, this was not the beginning of the internet. But for people who lived in small southern towns,
sure.
we didn't have cell phones and the internet yet.
Yeah, yeah.
We were hearing the music like a year after it already came out.
Uh-huh.
So I had a friend from academic camp that I went to every summer.
Adorable.
called the Colloe Experience in Asheville, North Carolina. They don't have this camp anymore, but I wish they did because it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I got to go and make like, you know, optic lasers for a summer. It was great.
Oh, wow. Anyway, that is great. I went up to a place in northern Arizona called Computer Camp, which just meant that it was a normal camp, but yeah. then 1 hour a day you were on the computer learning how to use nice. It and stuff.
So I know
it
was like,
it sounds like we were in a lab, you know what I mean? But it was still like, I still was like forced to ride a horse that I was terrified of. God. Like it was still all the kind of yeah. normal, heartbreaking, scary camp stuff.
And the whole camp is named after that 1 hour a day.
Computer camp.
Anyway, so I, much like you, I went to this camp, loved it. And I had a roommate there who went to a boarding school, and I'd never heard of it either.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I grew up in a very middle-class family.
Yeah.
And I never could have, that wasn't, my parents are a football player and a homemaker. I was, the only books in the house were mine. They're
right.
very smart people, but I was the academic and they were not.
Yeah.
So they were definitely not fearing the mile.
Uh-huh,
I was.
Uh-huh.
I think I was left on the doorstep. Uh-huh. But anyway, so she went there. And so I thought, I want to go there too. And I thought it would be just like camp. So, and also I thought this way I can get to go to Brown and get the t-shirt.
Sure, sure.
So I convinced my parents to apply, and thank goodness they had scholarships available.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to go, and I spent 10th, 11th, and 12th grade there, and it changed my life.
Yeah.
It's the entire reason I'm doing any of this.
Oh, wow.
For sure.
So what was it like? What was that transition like?
Sure.
And what were your focuses, your
big
foci?
Learning curve. Big learning curve from public school in a very small town, not a terribly well-funded public school.
So you probably didn't have to work very hard when you were...
Well, I did, but only because there was so much bullying at my school that you had to work really hard to just be able to focus.
Yeah.
So it's not that you had to work really hard on the work. You had to work really hard to be able to be allowed to do the work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to not compete with boys in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least the girls that I went to school with were much more interested in making sure they applied their lip gloss in enough time before they got out in the hallway once the bell rung than what the answer to the question was.
Right.
And some girls were not like that. Some girls were very focused on, but they were the exceptions rather than the rules. And
understood.
I wish I could have been one of those girls, but they also had to be like the pretty girls too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You had to be pretty to sit at the front of the class, mm-hmm. apparently. It was not alphabetic. So anyway.
The only exception I take to that is that I find you to be just lovely.
Oh,
so I don't, but I understand.
I think I would feel differently if I didn't show up to your house sweaty.
Again.
Thanks. Appreciate it. I don't remember where I was at. So I went to boarding school because I thought, yay, no boys. I don't have to compete with anybody to answer questions.
Mm-hmm.
Also, only like 10 people in the classroom rather than like 35.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be just like camp and I would get to hang out with my girlfriend Hartley from camp.
Mm-hmm.
All those things were great. But I had to learn how to translate Chaucer in Middle English.
Mm.
And I had to read lots and lots of Shakespeare. And I had to learn how to diagram sentences.
Mm.
I didn't even know that there was a space after a period.
Uh-huh.
And I had to dissect things and I had to learn German.
Was it like a religious based boarding school?
Supposedly,
was
it
like,
but it wasn't. But the wonderful thing about the school, I'll just say it's Salem Academy. It mm-hmm. was wonderful. It was mm-hmm. it's in this place called Old Salem, which is part of Winston-Salem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was founded by Moravians in the middle of the 18th century, specifically for girls' education. Moravians are wonderful in that they were very focused on educating women far before many other countries and religions were focused on that. So it was religiously based, but they did not in any way try and force this down anybody's throats.
Gotcha.
Because I'm not Moravian. I grew up Protestant. And so, it was just a wonderfully encouraging, empowering school where they made me feel like it was less important who I was taking to prom and more important where I was going to college.
Yeah.
And that is the entire reason why I got to go to Brown and get my master's at NYU, and I went to Wake Forest for my JD, and that I'm making this film, and that I have any interest in making myself the man that I was taught to marry,
mm-hmm,
as Gloria would say, as Saint Gloria would say. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I'm just really grateful. It changed my whole life.
Yeah.
Reading Fear of Flying by Erica Jong.
Right.
My whole life.
Right. So. I do remember reading that. And yeah. I don't, that is one of those things that I remember reading and knowing that it was significant, but already having received information.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, mm-hmm. And so sort of looking at it, kind of like when people say, you got to watch this, yeah, Alfred Hitchcock movie or whatever, mm-hmm, and you watch it, and then you, I'm not even really speaking for myself, because I feel like I watched that stuff when it, mm-hmm, was still kind of its own thing,
yeah,
in a way,
yeah.
But anyway, when you see something where somebody's trying to express to you, like, without this, mm-hmm, you wouldn't like Cabin in the Woods or,
right,
whatever, but if,
yes,
you're far enough removed from the original, sometimes you, yeah, get it and sometimes you don't, or,
yeah,
sometimes you look at it at arm's length and go, oh, I see why this is important, but this isn't the thing that's speaking to me the way it spoke to my friend or my aunt or my sister or my mom or whatever. So I remember reading that, but I don't remember having an aha moment about it. I remember sort of, mm-hmm, being more like, you know, like, oh, I see that this is really significant,
right,
but, you know, since then I had already read blah blah blah, I don't know.
And it wasn't the first time you were hearing this. For me, it was, yeah, a come to Jesus moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For me, this is not how I grew up.
Yeah,
you know, I'm maybe the second woman in my family to have a job. I mean, and that's fine. I mean, working inside the home is a job. I just mean a job outside the home,
right?
And so this was not how I was raised.
Right.
Like,
right,
not getting married, not having children by the age of 24 was not something that was ever anticipated for me. My father always used to tell me that when I was born, he always told me that I could do anything I wanted to do and that boys and girls are equally capable. Thank goodness I had a father like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he also told me that when I got married and had children in that order,
right,
that when I was born, he looked at me and was blown away by how much he loved me. And he thought to himself, okay, here's a wedding and college tuition. Those are the things. And thank goodness college tuition is in the list.
Right, right,
but
right.
The wedding is in the list.
Right.
You know?
Right,
and
right.
So I just, that was just not how I was raised.
Yeah.
So for me to read this, and I mean, I was like 25 when I read this. So for, yeah, me to go that many years,
yeah,
was big. I hadn't gone, yeah, to NYU yet, but I'd gone to Brown and I still hadn't really heard this yet. Like,
yeah,
I had feelings that way, and certainly girls in my girls' school had already heard this. I probably am just a late bloomer. Other girls I knew who were younger than me did know this stuff because they came from bigger cities or different places, because this boarding school attracted people from like Bahrain. Like,
sure,
it was very it was so intensely academic that Saudi Arabian families felt secure sending their daughters there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
yeah.
I was probably just the only person who hadn't heard about this wonderful thing,
uh-huh,
called feminism. I just didn't know.
Right.
So anyway, I had my come to Jesus moment, as they say, where I'm from. And I'm really grateful, because otherwise I don't know what I would be doing with my life right now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How did the law start to become interesting to you and kind of creep its way?
That's sort of a funny story too. So how do I explain this? So I graduated from Brown and I came to Los Angeles because my grandmother used to live here in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to sort of see it. You know, mm-hmm, I'd never been to the West Coast ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just sort of got in my car and drove. And I, when I was there, I saw this really old film called This Property is Condemned,
mm-hmm,
with Natalie Wood and Robert Redford.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was based on a Tennessee Williams play.
Oh,
know
okay.
That. Because I'd never
I don't know. Yeah, I've never heard. I don't know.
I was a neuroscience major, so I'd never written anything, really. And I thought to myself, I really loved it. And it was about sort of how I grew up, like these old boarding houses of the Southern Gothic. And I thought, I could do that. So I wrote my first play. And I sent that play to NYU like a day before. I didn't know, it was like a day before they were closing their application cycle, and I got in and it was free and they gave me a full fellowship, and I thought, well, maybe I'm being told something. So I decided to go, and while I was there, I the tuition was paid for, but I didn't need something to eat with.
Uh-huh.
So I got this internship, thank goodness, and As the World Turns.
Oh my God, like, this is crazy.
The middle of Brooklyn, like down the QE,
yeah,
line, like in the middle of like Fury and knife land, like do not eat the coleslaw in the deli because you will get food poisoning, which happened to me.
Boy.
And so I got an internship there getting people, like doing what's called character tracking and getting people coffee. And thank goodness they let me sit in the writer's room a lot.
Okay, so for character tracking, you because this show has been on for a gajillion years, you have to know the sort of...
Right, so character tracking is like...
The genealogy of all these characters.
Where is this person who's been around for 75 years? Where is she at now? To keep... Because it's written in a, it's written a little bit differently than shows... They're not soap operas. Like you have breakdown writers and you have script writers. The breakdown writers write the outlines of what's going to happen from week to week.
Right.
And then they send out those breakdowns to the Monday person, the Monday script writer or the Tuesday script writer. And that person in isolation writes from this 22-page outline that episode. But you have to read the tracking because otherwise you won't know what happened on
Friday. Sure.
So you got to watch
That's a mountain of information.
And read the tracking. It's a mountain of information. So I sent my one play, because this was my first semester in grad school, to this wonderful woman named Amy Handelsman, who was an EP at CBS, Procter & Gamble. And she just happened to really like it. She just, I got lucky, and she happened to like Southern Gothic people. And so I got to write for As the World Turns. And so...
This is so...
I'm sorry, this is such a long story.
No, no. It's just like, I don't even... I can't... It's hard for me not to need to... Hover a little longer on neuroscience to soap opera.
I promise I'm getting to the
neuroscience to soap opera, Anna. Neuroscience to soap opera. That's extraordinary.
I think I did what I thought my... Here's the thing. When I where I grew up, much like probably a lot of places that people grow up, writing was not a thing that people did.
Sure.
You know, that was what Hollywood liberals and frankly whores did. That's what I was always told.
Yeah.
And so this was not a thing that you did ever. And if you did it, you certainly didn't show anybody. Because frankly, where I'm from, people would tell me I was a lesbian for doing stuff like that, which is hideous.
Yeah.
And people were always calling me that anyway. I didn't care. I mean, I guess it kind of hurt my feelings when I was little and didn't even know why, what that even meant.
Because you knew that whatever it was, they meant it as an insult or whatever.
Like eight, but,
yeah.
But I, but somehow it was supposed to be a bad thing.
Right.
And I think that was just because I read all the time and because I was nice to other girls. Because women were supposed to be mean to each other in this hyper toxic masculine place.
Right. Right.
My hugging other girls or being nice to them or not competing with them.
And were you like giggly and flirty and trying to? Yeah,
and I wasn't, and because I wasn't, I didn't care who, I didn't date people because I just was a late bloomer in terms of my interest of boys, and because I wanted to be nice to other girls, and I didn't mind being physically nice to them, they thought that I was hitting on them.
Right.
Anyway, so, yeah, so, so I wrote for As the World Turns, which was great, but let me tell you, 85 pages a week.
Jeez.
It's like writing a play a week.
Yeah.
So I cut my teeth writing... That was my first job.
Yeah.
I've never written anything but that one play. So I just had to learn how to write a play a week, which was great training.
No kidding. Talk about being thrown into it. Right. Yeah.
So I so I wrote for As Returns, and then I wrote for Guiding Light, and then the writer's strike happened. I don't know if you remember this from like 2007, 2008.
I do, yeah.
Cool.
So, I was down here by then, so it was,
yeah.
It was around me.
So the head writer at... for CBS Procter & Gamble for As the World Turns, went to Columbia Law School. And so when the writer's strike happened, I thought, ooh, I'm the new kid. I might never have a job again. This might be a fluke. It's the only job I've ever had.
Sure.
This might not work out so well forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, I wonder if I should apply to law school.
Oh, my God. So, again, not a totally logical on the sort of
it's
on its face.
This is
I love
happen,
it though.
This is what happens when you don't have a mentor.
I love it though.
No map, no more.
No, I love it. I love that it's like she had a brown t-shirt on, and then your friend you adored who went to that boarding school, and then you had the head writer who had a law degree. Like I think
I feel
it's
like if
so,
I had
it's
a mentor,
very charming.
My path would have been a little bit more like.
I certainly didn't have a mentor.
Right?
Again, that was something that I thought rich people had.
And
like I was like, oh, rich, yeah.
Rich people.
Oh, if you, oh, you refer to a mentor when you've like always known you were going to have one.
Fuck, man.
But,
and I just didn't know what that was like.
Yeah.
My mentor was like, here's how to marry a car salesman and live by the highway.
Right.
Like, here's my mentorship experience.
Right.
But I feel like in that way, we get to become the mentors that we wanted.
Yeah.
For younger girls.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
You know, you get to be that woman that you needed when you were 22.
Sure.
Which, you know, I don't know. Anyway, so...
So you thought the logical thing to do as I'm waiting to find out if my soap opera job will continue is to apply to law school.
I didn't know how long the strike was going to happen.
Sure.
And I was still in grad school and I thought, okay, I got like, you know, a semester left. I better do something. So I applied to law school. And
did the soap opera just shut down at that point? I don't remember how it affected. That's that is a world to me that is, and when I hear things like 85 pages, like there's a reason that that's a world unto itself.
It is. But let me tell you, that's why writing two books that are at least, I had to cut 150,000 words out of this book.
Yeah.
I keep pointing over there because I just happen to see
it. Yep, there it is. There it is.
Let me tell you, writing 300,000 words, I can do that in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That is nothing. Because I got, this is my training. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful because it makes you go with what you feel as opposed to what you think.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know how long the strike was going to happen, going to go on. And I was going to be out of grad school soon. And so I thought I'll apply to law school. But then I also wrote the proposal for my first book, which is not this book. This is my second book. Mm-hmm. But I thought one of these two things will work out. And I got lucky and they, I sold my first book and then I got into law school. So I had to decide what to do. And so I spent my last semester of grad school and that summer writing, sort of like the first draft that you have to turn in of the book. Then I went to my first semester of law school. Then I had to take a year off from law school to do my book tour. And then I came back to law school. And while I was in law school, I was also teaching some writing classes and the communications department. I was an adjunct professor and I wrote an independent film or two and I wrote for Cartoon Network for this show called Squidbillies, which is about redneck squids from Georgia.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Squidbillies. Yeah.
I love that show.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that's a busy,
because the guys who created the show went to
Wake Forest. Busy.
That's how I got.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Anyway,
what were you, and so while were you, what were you focusing on in law school? What were your interests? Did you have specific?
Constitutional law? I specifically, focused on that. Obviously, I mean, intellectual property helps a lot. I know all about trademarks and copyrights. I've helped myself and many other people trademark their work, copyright
their work. Good to know. Filing that away.
I'm happy to help.
Yeah.
I've helped lots and lots of people start 501c3s, this documentary was produced by a 501c3 that I incorporated with the federal government and registered technically. And it's nice to be able to help artists.
So sure.
They don't have to pay $2,000 to go have somebody do a USPTO search and registration for them. I do that all the time for people.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Yeah, it's really nice, but I can do my own taxes. It's really great. And I could do legal releases and talent contracts. And
sure.
All sorts of stuff and fair use legal reviews.
Yeah.
I do hire some people to do that because I don't really want to have to do all of it, but I can.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really good money saver.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's really nice to be able to have that to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice to be able to have that to be able to create projects that hopefully help people I don't get to interact with personally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, it makes it easier to do projects that aren't necessarily commercial. Because I would probably be much more successful and much wealthier and have a beautiful home somewhere if I chose to just do TNA films or just do stuff that like is just going to play to the red states. But fuck that, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to be making films about like transgender cats.
Sure. Yeah.
I want people to learn history and know that history is just entirely the present.
Mm-hmm.
The past isn't dead. It isn't even past.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's from Faulkner.
Yeah.
I didn't write that.
That's fair. I'm sure he would say he was also paraphrasing someone. It's just
probably
that he's the most recent person that like gets the most credit for it. And so what, when you were doing all of this, were people in the moment remarking on how extraordinary it was? Like, were people saying like, I can't believe that you're doing, that you're writing a film and you're in law school and
you're... Well, I never told anybody about this stuff. Because again, I grew up with the mindset of you just don't talk about this stuff because people think it's weird.
Well, what about relationships? When did you start, like, when did you let someone get close and did you feel a sense of... Like, I don't want to be too much for this person in terms of
much for every person.
Oh man, I refuse to believe that. But I mean, I'm saying that in the context of, you know, stuff that I think we do bump up against, which is normal human stuff, no matter who you are, what, you know, your sexual orientation is, like things of feelings of competition or feelings of inadequacy or feelings of fear or feelings of all that kind of stuff.
I know.
You know,
and I'm trying really hard not to talk about you, even though I feel like at a certain point in time, I always try and not talk about myself anymore and talk about the other person. But I feel like this is something that a lot of women, yourself included, you know, experience probably, and I don't want to presume anything, but yeah, it is something that we all kind of, I guess we all kind of go through. And I got really lucky. I have had a shit ton of terrible relationships with crazy people, and hopefully I can use that in a book sometime. But
why do you think that is? I mean, in terms of like what we're
probably because my mother did suffer from mental illness.
That's felt familiar.
For sure. And she had terrible anxiety and depression, and very, very codependent woman. And she's just one of the funniest people I've ever met. People used to invite her to wakes to keep people from getting too sad.
Amazing.
You know? And my father is brilliant, but he is an alcoholic. And he's a recovering alcoholic. He has been since I was 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot in there. And I grew up with a fair amount of like anger in my household, and a fair amount of physical abuse in my household, and certainly a fair amount of emotional abuse in my household. And so I think I was sort of always dating different versions of my father. Mm-hmm. And so... and then, thank goodness, I met somebody who, just randomly, my friend picked him out for me in a bar, and then he hit me with his ass accidentally. Thank goodness, I met someone who's the total opposite of me in every way, and thank goodness he puts up with me. Yep. And my crazy nonsense.
Was there a period in which, and I don't want to get overly personal about that, but I can't believe what
honestly,
time it is.
I feel like if you're a writer who minds getting personal, your shit's going to suck.
Yeah.
I mean, I just hate that. That's horrible. Yeah. I'm probably cursing too much on your shit.
Not in the least. Oh, no. Heavens, no. No, no, no. There's nothing about
my debutante training is coming out. There's zero
pressure not to curse.
Yes, I also did debutante training.
That's
so this is like with the rearing up of the cotillion classes are like.
Yeah. Again, something that doesn't like register in reality to me at all is a thing that still happens. Yeah. When you fell in love, did you have to overcome a sense of this isn't right because it was so right that it didn't feel like anything else? Or was there a more immediate recognition of like, this is right. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I wish that would have been so psychologically normal.
Well, no, but so I mean, healthy. Like, I think that like I, when I think,
a good
I just
thing.
Well no but yeah. I and but that's why I'm saying like I'm yeah. I don't think that's I don't know how common that is if we because patterns are what's comfortable so
sure
in fact
they are neurologically comfortable. The synapses fire in particular ways.
Exactly.
And that's the muscle that's exercised, and that muscle is exercised.
Exactly. Yeah. I was just talking about that exact thing with what was I think it might have been Andy Richter. It was someone very recent where we were talking about because we were talking about because you guys know, but it was the whole idea of, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy and just the idea of, I'm sure it was Andy. It doesn't matter. But that if you think of your thoughts that way, if you can remove, that was the kind of the whole, guys, if you haven't listened to Andy's episode, this is a good opportunity to go back. It's like supplementary, material if you're able to separate yourself from your brain, because that's a big deal for me, having gone through stuff too, is trying to have those conversations with myself where I'm like, just because you think we're the same thing and you think you're right doesn't mean I have to listen to you and how important that is. And I think it might have been great for me to study neuroscience in the sense that, and perhaps that's why you were drawn to it, because of your mom, right? I mean, perhaps in terms of like, how does the brain work anyway? You know what I mean? What's the way of looking at this in a more objective way?
Yeah, and mine was even more particular at Brown. Mine was the harder level of that. There's neuroscience and then there's cognitive neuroscience at Brown. And cognitive neuroscience is the most difficult, besides engineering, specifically mechanical and electrical engineering. It is the most difficult. So what I must say, I think that the reason I chose it initially is because it would make my parents the most proud of me.
Oh,
and
well.
It's the biggest challenge. And I'm always one of those people who likes the biggest challenge,
you
know? And it had like 35 credits. And I was like, I'm doing that.
Wow.
Yeah. So for better or
that's
worse.
That's not me. That's what I'm saying. Wow. I would look at that and go, 35 credits, forget it.
I feel like that's a healthier approach.
Well, I don't know if that's
because
true.
Then you're actually doing something you like. don't have to force yourself to become. And so I must say this, like I choose things that are challenges rather than things that I enjoy.
Okay.
I grow to enjoy them.
Yeah.
By mastering them. Mm-hmm, and I will say, as someone who knows a great deal about the interactions of cognitive dissonance, which is what you're describing, and the prefrontal lobe cortexes, which is our rationalization decision-making centers, you absolutely can separate yourself from
Yeah.
pain.
Yeah.
You can. For sure.
That's really,
in fact, you can separate yourself from your pain centers.
Yeah.
It's asking anyone who's ever survived an eating disorder.
Yeah.
Or who has ever been burned.
Yeah.
You can train yourself to not feel it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I just think that's really, truly is.
Yeah.
But it feels like, what's daunting about that to me is that everything that you're saying feels like 35 credits to me. It feels like, well, I guess I could just stop doing everything else and then learn everything there is to know about that and train myself to be that person.
But you have all this other
in
stuff
moderation,
to do. Like being a San Francisco
But wouldn't my understanding, like, shouldn't I devote at least some time to that? Because wouldn't it help
ostensibly help all the others?
Yeah, maybe. Because maybe, you know, if that feeds into the rest, if that makes you a better version of yourself,
really,
you know, whatever that is.
Phineas Gage, I think. You like reading about Phineas Gage.
Which one's Phineas Gage? I know that name for sure. Oh, yeah.
Who survived? I know.
Unfortunately, too many frontal lobe stories end in people murdering other people. But
that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's right. It's arguable that Lizzie Borden had a head injury.
You just keep it's like the chicken and the egg, though. You can't tell if it's like we want to, because we're creatures who want patterns and want to understand things. It's like, are we searching for that head injury?
Yeah.
And everyone has head injuries, but when you're a psychopath, you point to the head injury, or is that the other way around?
Well, serial killers happen to have three specific things in common, traditionally.
Yeah.
Chemical imbalance.
Yeah.
History of psychological, emotional.
So nature and nurture together.
And a head injury, specifically to the prefrontal lobe cortexes or the amygdala.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah,
fascinating. So fascinating.
That's another rabbit hole.
Oh, I love that rabbit hole. Love maybe is the wrong word for something that's we have a sort of fascination with, but it's the same with the crime podcast my interest in legal stuff. It's trying to make sense of that, like, well, if I can make sense of it, somehow it'll be less frightening in some ways, but
maybe
clearly I also
want
to be frightened.
Go to law school, Janet.
It's been said, and I'm like, well, maybe when I'm like 50, then I'll go to
That'd
law
be
school.
Awesome.
It is very interesting. I want to get into this MASH game. I feel bad because I recently got a letter from the sweetest 19-year-old who said that they wish my conversations were longer and my MASH games were shorter. And I thought, I can't believe that like an hour and 15 to an hour and a half long standard length episodes is not long enough. Or maybe they would rather I didn't do MASH at all. But
that's a great compliment.
But then tomorrow I'll get an email from someone who's like, I wish the MASH games were longer. I wish you'd get to it faster. That's my favorite part. So, and it was the sweetest, like even my critiques are like the sweetest people in the world. So, to you know who you are. I apologize that I am cutting this conversation short, but I now also know that, we could talk for four years about this.
Forever. But did I even answer your question? I feel like you asked me like why
I can't remember
why I went to boarding school. I don't remember.
I think we got
I feel like I just feel bad because I feel like I didn't answer your question.
Well, I've asked multiple that, and I think, and then while in the process of you trying to answer one, I will just switch topics and make you answer something else. So that's also on me.
That's okay.
I think it's a good, it really is like the tiniest toe dip into, and what I hope will encourage people to check out your work, because it's obviously incredibly thorough.
You're in both the films.
I know.
You're in both the films. The first film I'm finishing right now, it's being color and sound corrected right now. So it's going to be, I'm submitting to festivals this fall, hopefully next year. And I'm here for a couple months because the book was optioned by Buna Murray Productions and by this really lovely producer named Patty Ivins. And we are working together to develop a series.
Nice.
And so we're hoping, I'm an executive Bruce, and we're hoping to attract a showrunner. We're just coming up with the world and the characters. And we're hoping that somebody will want to come along and join on telling so many of these stories about how the different girls in the show, mm-hmm. and all the different shows.
Well, I'll show up for anything you want me to do, even if it's just walking across the room carrying a glass of water. I'm in.
I'm hoping that, well, it'll be a series and we'll get Jenji Cohen or Jill Soloway.
Yeah.
Any number of amazingly talented women to come do this.
Let's do it.
We can. I would love to be able to cast some of the women who are in the book and in the documentary.
That's it. I love it. You know, and I love all those girls. So.
Because finally I'm they in. Get to work together rather than like, hi, maybe someday.
Right, right. There is a fair
never
amount
get to work
of that.
With you because there's only two of us in every.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially in writers' rooms. Goodness gracious.
And I hope we can do a screening here so you can see all these wonderful contributions from these. I mean, I'm just so grateful that you guys even wanted to talk to me about this shit.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously, you know, I think it is something that. That's similar to certain podcasts, and I think I feel the same way with luckiness about mine, which is you were lucky when we realize that we're interested in something that other people are interested in, particularly when the people that we want to talk to are have want to scratch the same itch, even if they don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. That it takes someone to say, hey, I want to talk about this. Would you want to talk about it? Yeah. And sometimes people are like, I've been waiting for someone to ask me that, or someone's like, I didn't realize how much I felt about this until I was prompted, you know what I mean? So, yeah. It's great. It's like, it's such a great gift that your interest allowed people to search their thoughts and their feelings about something too. You know,
thank
I think
you.
It's great.
I
started reading the book and there's like, I love Eliza Skinner and there's so much great stuff from her in there. And she's my new
so brilliant.
Fave. Even though she already was my fave.
She's so brilliant.
But she's really amazing.
And she really just sort of is one of those voices in both the film and in the book that was indispensable.
Yeah.
Just indispensable insights. And even people that, you know, have been around a little bit longer, like Molly Shannon, just, and Mo Collins, you know, just talking about how things were before our current era gives our current era so many more colors and understanding.
Absolutely.
And it just sort of echoes what Eliza was saying and yes ands what Eliza was saying.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So anyway, I would just love the whole thing, and I hope everybody copies me and we all go out and write a lot of books about all the women I haven't thought of. I hope everybody steals my idea and goes writes lots and other books about Toni Fields and like Anita Loos and all these women I couldn't fit into the first one that I hope to fit into the second one.
Yeah.
If the first one even sells well enough to have a second one. Like,
yeah.
You know, like I just hope that we get to tell all these stories.
Are you doing, nobody did you knows. Do an audiobook version? Are you doing an audiobook version?
They haven't asked me to do one yet.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll see if it's
well, if you ever need anybody to read, I guess it's a little weird, but
no, I would love for you to read it.
I consume audiobooks in a way that I can't
listening
consume.
To it. I would thought you're offering to read it.
I am. No, no, I fully are. Am. No, I fully am because I know that is a way that many of us, quote unquote read anymore because, you know, it's just a way to be doing two things at once.
I would love that.
And I think anybody who listens to a podcast is likely to be open to listening to an audiobook if they are also like, well, I don't really have that much time to read. So
I would love that out there too. I would love that because I feel like that any way we can get more women and men and people of either or no gender to read these stories, the better.
Yeah.
And I would love to not have to perform. I would love to have somebody who's better at it do it.
I put it out there. Now it's just laying out there, like it's all flopping around out of the ocean onto the land.
I love it.
Okay. So for our first MASH category, let's do a time travel situation where you're in your safety bubble and it's an opportunity to actually see, for better or for worse, in terms of moments in history, things that maybe would become more real, either in a profoundly sad way, frankly, or in a really exciting way that for us still feel like they live on the page in a way. Does that make sense? Like if you want to see, I'm just saying, like, no, that first of all, everyone is laughing their asses off, but like, this is your opportunity to visit a period in time. Right. What I'm offering up is, if you, that it doesn't have to all be pleasant. Mm. Like if you feel like it would be somehow emotionally useful or intellectually useful to see Hitler kill people, I totally understand that. But it also can be like, I want to see David Bowie's first, you know what I'm saying? Anything like that, lighthearted or, you know, intense.
So anything you feel like I feel like I would like to see play out in the future.
Well, no, oh no, it's more time traveling to see, like, for example, this is another example where, I love history so much, but it's so hard for me to, you know, I think that's why people like going to a museum and seeing a dress from 1763, yeah. because your brain still needs, especially because we have so much entertainment mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. that when we have an experience that we haven't had before, we say it's like a movie.
Yeah.
That for me, it would, I would want to see, like, I have an idea of what my grandmother looked like riding the ferry mm-hmm. from Angel Island into the city of San Francisco to work at a cafe. But do I, or am I just picturing the movie version of mm-hmm. that? So part of me wants the visceral experience of, like, I smelled what there was to smell. Mm-hmm. I saw her. I, you know.
She was Irish? Was she Irish?
My grandma Malone is.
I'm just curious. I'm sorry.
She just has her background is Scottish, but it's like deep Mormon, like the earliest Mormons. I did not realize that until I started looking at the genealogy that my aunt did recently. And I was like, holy shit. Sorry, grandma. But like, she's like old school Mormon. Like, I think I just didn't know that. Nowhere else in my family does that exist. But on my grandma's side, boy, there'd be some, those Mormons are like, to me, it seems like there's like some Scottish people who came over and just were real early adopters in Mormonism. Yeah.
Well, sorry, which is sort of interesting, but I just, you'll be probably happy to know that was not on the internet.
I really, it's just the family tree that exists that one of my aunts is terrific at that. And that actually is one thing that Mormons, they encourage finding out about your history, but a lot of that I think has to do with you then go back and baptize all the dead people in your family. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
Well, Southerners have that in common.
Wrote
an entire book about called the White Rose of York about my English ancestors, because my family came to the South with a land grant from George II.
Okay. That's a speaking of old school. Speaking
we're
of old school.
School. We're preschool.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, I get it. And we have that in common. So sorry to change the subject back to you.
But so that was sort of things like moments in time in history eras that you're curious about that would give you the opportunity to really experience them rather than read about them and imagine.
Gosh, I would love to see Moms Mabley performing with the, I hesitate to even use the name of the traveling show because it's so of the era. So please don't think I'm using this without knowledge, but it was the Colored Circus.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that because she arguably invented stand-up comedy.
Amazing.
When she was about 14, because women had to sing to be heard, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's why Phyllis Diller, who, by the way, was an opera singer in college, started off singing. They had to be sing to be heard. And Moms would sing, and then she'd stop and talk to her audience a little bit. Then she'd sing some more. Then she'd go and talk. And eventually it was more talking and less singing, and then more talking, less singing, and then it was no singing.
That's so amazing.
And this allowed somebody like Joan to just not sing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I would love to see that because she's from North Carolina.
Yeah.
She was from North Carolina. She had some experiences that I thankfully have never had.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that little girl creating.
You bet.
This world-changing form of art.
Yeah.
And
good luck with the other two. No, yeah. You're going to have great answers for the other two. No, I need two more.
Okay. I would love to go see Sophie Scholl,
great.
Head of the White Rose resistance movement, who she and a group of other, mostly women, but also men, they rescued a lot of Jewish people and assassinated a lot of Nazis.
There you go.
And she was eventually, killed herself in her early 20s. That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
There's so many. Fuck you, Janet. I want to go watch Mr. Rogers testifying in front of Congress.
Oh, wow. Great.
Talking about how children deserve their own television.
That's great.
And the congressmen, these deeply conservative, spare the rod and spoil the child people.
Yeah.
Of not the GIs, but the lost generation.
Yeah.
moved to tears by him, and that creating some of the cornerstone of public broadcasting that we now take for granted, and paving the way for Sesame Street.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Conjunction Junction.
Yeah.
And what was that like? 3, 2, 1,
contact.
Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff, you know, that sort of back when we've prized knowledge over performance, mm-hmm. back when we had less in the windows and more in the home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was back when we really rewarded people, perhaps more than we do so today, for the substance of their character mm-hmm. rather than the force of their personas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the question is like, is the proliferation, I can't go on about
it's
this. It's going to go on forever, but do we have
yes.
more, do we just have more of everything now
yeah.
such that there's room
right.
for better or for worse for yeah. those personalities
yeah.
And we also can find those voices that are equally loud in a different way.
Agreed. And conversely, to argue against myself, as lawyers are wont to do.
You have to, otherwise you don't know how to
sure.
argue it.
What character were we acknowledging? Those of white heterosexual men
yeah.
who were testifying both within and in front of Congress?
Yeah.
Like, really? Are those the only voices we want to go back and capture? Because I bet there was a whole shit ton of voices back then who weren't able to go, you know, testify in front of Congress who could have moved people to tears just as easily, if not more easily.
There you go.
So there you go.
There you go.
You know, I'm probably full of shit.
You're absolutely not full of shit. The question is just the place that we feel like living at in any specific moment, and we don't have to choose. We can be angry about one thing and be yeah. nostalgic about the other and have them coexist in
I
time.
Would
love
it's
that. Messy.
I know.
The past is messy because the present is messy because the future is messy.
It's true. And so as an alternative to number three, I would go watch the last of the Red Hot Mamas perform. Sophie Tucker singing.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to double up this category so that this is a six category
really?
Where you get two okay. out of six instead of one out of three because
cool.
your answers are so brilliant. Okay.
Thank you. Sophie Tucker, Belle Barth, Pearl Williams. Would love to go see the Red Hot Mamas performing. And I would love to go see Mae West defending her African-American heavyweight champion of the world boyfriend when he was kicked out of their apartment complex based on racial laws against
this is amazing.
People of color owning property in Los Angeles, and how she bought the building and to change the law.
Man, I just want to take a class with you, like a 1-hour class of each of these, like to offer that
Thanks.
Up to every listener. Like, okay, this will be a 6-hour course based on Anna's MASH choices.
Thanks. Thank you.
Mae West, and then give me one more, which
God.
I know is not going to be
one?
A problem.
I want to go watch Toadie Fields before she lost her leg. Toadie Fields performing on Jack Parr.
Great.
Doing some of that seminal, some of the first comedy that wasn't as self-deprecating as Phyllis had sort of done, but drawing attention to the sort of everyday struggles of a woman who was larger.
Mm-hmm.
And as my mother, my whole life was a larger woman. And so I don't really see that sometimes
mm-hmm.
because I
mm-hmm.
grew up seeing that. And so for her to be on television in the early 60s talking about what it was like to not be able to shop for clothing mm-hmm. because nobody made anything in her size.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to have experienced that with my mom, even in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
when the only place you could go was like Lane Bryant and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that. I would love to see a woman talking about things that men didn't want to hear.
Right. Right.
At a time when all the gatekeepers were men. Not
That's
that
great.
They're not 95% men now,
right.
but it would be nice to see the women's faces and how they would do what they were the whisperers, I call them.
Mm-hmm.
They're always the women laughing very quietly
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to offend the guy over there.
That's right.
And I get a lot of those messages. I get a lot of messages. I mean, maybe you get some of these messages about, oh, I love what you said. This is so true. But then they'll never say it or a man can hear it or read it.
Mm.
And I'll always encourage them to, like, thank you so much. You know what would be awesome? If you put this where someone other than you and I could read it.
Right.
Because then it's not just me having a problem. It's a problem.
Right, 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 right.
And so I get it. There's fear.
Right.
But that's rape culture, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's an Ouroboros.
Yeah.
You know, the fear is the fear until it's no longer the fear, but it will never become less fearful until you confront it. And so I just, I don't know. Anyway, I would love to go see Toadie Wheels at Summer City.
I love that. I know that really brought up a lot of other stuff that I've been talking about lately, especially with respect to, like, you know, giant corporations who own politicians, but and that Ouroboros.
Corporations are criminal.
Yeah.
As Dickens once said, the more I understand of the wealthy, the better I understand the guillotine.
Here you go.
I'll say it. You don't have
nice
to.
Nice and sharp. Okay. Okay. So next category is, well, let's get into alternate universe partners, crushes, sexy times, romance. Three. They can be characters. They can be, you know, actors of a certain era. They can be characters from a book or a cartoon, anything like that.
Oh, is this like a marry, kill, screw thing?
Well, I don't have you screw or kill anyone, and nor do you need to marry them. It's just like, you know, that like an opportunity to have your sort of alternate universe husband or wife, have just, you know, this maybe it's a character that you're like, well, I find this character to be very sexy, but I probably wouldn't want to have to like have heart to hearts. So, but you don't have to account for any of those reasons, but just three. That would be fun.
Okay, cool. You know, I just don't have any interest in celebrities, so it might be hard for me.
No, that's why I'm saying it can be characters from a book. Okay. It can be characters from, you know, it can be.
I've just never been into, like, I've never thought any of, I don't know. Anyway, so characters. I'm sure 100 people say Mr. Darcy, but he would have been such an asshole. Because, I mean, and would have had a really long pointy chin. He would have looked like me.
You don't have a long pointy chin.
Well, I mean, like, with a long pointy chin.
I see.
It would look like me with a long pointy chin.
Well, what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just like a lot of people think it's very brawny Colin Firth.
Oh, right.
And then, in fact, Edwardian gentleman at the time, very slim,
delicate,
shouldered, my skin, pointy long chins, full faces. Anyway, sorry. They would not have thought he was cute.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotta rein it in. Okay. So, Lord. I'd say Hemingway, but he was secretly gay and shot himself.
Yeah.
My Lord. Not Picasso. He used to buy women to marry so he could paint them.
Yeah, and then that's give a them problem back. With a lot of the artists. It's the work, not the personal relationships.
Because that's probably not good. I have no idea who I would like to have any sexy time.
Well, maybe we can definitely skip the category.
I wish I didn't have to. I guess I just have like zero. God, I guess I'm just so, I'm like a frog with no sex drive.
That's not only, but it, like I said, it doesn't have to be sexy times. Like I would marry Emma Thompson tomorrow, but it's not because I want to like have sex with her. You know what I mean?
See,
like it can be whatever the structure of the relationship can be whatever you want. It can be companionship. It can be eroticism. It can be friendship.
Again, you're smarter than me. Do you know what I mean?
No, not at all. Not at all.
My heteronormative
paradigm. It was not even a question. I threw out a bunch of words that I hoped you would put together in a sentence.
Okay, so I would, oh my gosh. I feel like I would love to be friends with Jane Austen, but she would never leave her home because she didn't. And she died a virgin, and I don't know. I feel like she was pretty miserable. Oh, Sally Ride. No, she's still alive.
But that's, there's nothing wrong with that. No,
Sally Ride. I would love to that's great. A story. I would love I would love to be friends with her.
Yeah, great.
I would love that. Annette Bening, because she is brilliant.
Yeah, she certainly is.
Some of my favorite writers I have met and was disappointed by, so I won't mention any of them. Lord. Well, I grew up reading a lot of Anne Rice novels. And when I met her son, Christopher, it turns out he and I sort of also grew up partially in Richardson, Texas. And so did he. And he went to NYU and so did I. So that was freaky. But Anne Rice probably would love to be friends with
I love that. That's great. Yeah. That's perfect.
Is that good?
Yes. Those are fantastic. I heartily applaud those choices. Okay.
I feel like when I go home, I'm going to have a different list.
Well, that's the nature of this. Just think of it as improv and know that you're spontaneously saying something and then letting it go.
Maybe it's like Toni Morrison.
That's how
or
I
something.
Have to answer great. It too. Yeah. Do you want me to swap anybody out? For Tony?
What was my three?
Sally Ride, Annette Bening, and Anne Rice.
How can I swap?
Don't swap.
You gotta make longer lists.
Don't swap.
Okay.
How about collaborative stuff? You could put Tony in that category. Like, oh, you get to collaborate with this person, living or dead.
There's no way you can collaborate with Tony.
Oh,
Morrison.
I'm putting it down right now. There's How dare you? You don't know.
Like
you don't know until
in that relationship.
Well, you'll have to push yourself. Surround yourself with people you feel are more talented than you. That's my motto.
Oh my God.
Okay.
So, leech off
so
of
you're
their
collaborating
greatness.
With Tony Morrison. Two more collaborators.
This is impossible.
Too bad. Look at me. I'm really getting tough love now.
You are really hard at this. God, Mrs. Havisham. Oh. No, you're more Mrs. Trunchbull from Matilda.
Maybe Roald Dahl's on this list of collaborations.
Great.
Good to know. Okay.
Yeah.
Noted.
Yeah. Would not probably work out that well. Who in their right mind would not want to work with Jill Soloway?
Yeah, great.
Or literally anyone who's ever met Jill Soloway or worked with Jill Soloway.
Uh-huh.
God, I wish you could give me like 25 minutes.
I know. This is brutal.
Living or dead?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll just go with Alan Ball.
Great.
Not that that's a bad choice at all. It's a wonderful choice. It's an amazing choice. It's never going to happen. It's just that I loved Six Feet Under so much when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I love Six Feet Under. I loved, God, what was that movie that came out in 1999? I can't believe I'm forgetting this because I loved it so much with Mira Sorvino. Oh, God. American Beauty.
Oh, sure. Sure.
I remember one of the first pilots I ever wrote was basically my looking at the structure of the pilot for Six Feet Under, which was not, I later learned, written as the structure for a pilot. It was
like
a film.
Sure.
Just let him do anything.
That's right.
And I was like, oh, well, that's why that didn't work out.
Right.
But that's
when everyone tries to write Memento. It's like, no. Dude, that's the exception to the rule, as Save the Cat tells people.
Or Mary Gateskill. Mary effing Gateskill. Do you know who that is? She's an author, but she wrote the script for The Secretary.
Oh, God, that's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary. Right?
Maggie
Gyllenhaal.
It's not The Secretary.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I just wanted to make sure I was talking about the same movie.
It is Secretary.
Yeah, I love that movie.
That was the first film script I ever read besides The Way We Were.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that, I thought this is the way everything should be written.
Wow.
Yeah.
I should read it as a script because I absolutely love that movie.
I read it when I was supposed to be working while a bookseller at Borders.
Great. Oh, Borders. That's so many fond memories.
I know. It was a beer that used to be around here.
Anyway. Good old Borders. Okay. Yeah. Next category is, I'm going to do this then. I'm going to do movies or TV shows that you can sort of jump into and live in and kind of get it all over you. So whatever that feeling of wanting to be steeped in something is, three. And you're not reliving the plot. You're just...
You. No, I can't do that. The Crown.
Great. When are they making more of those?
I guess they're probably in the midst of season two right now.
Oh, great.
I probably should not do everything that's just BBC because that's probably not very patriotic of me.
This is your game. Yeah. You get to say whatever you want. And that's the majority of what I watch is BBC too. So that's,
IT Crowd. The IT Crowd.
Great.
The IT Crowd for sure. Anything by Graham Linehan.
Great.
I'm probably butchering his last name. Is it right. Linehan? Linehan?
Linehan?
I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm such an idiot.
I have no idea. I'm just seeing it in my head. I think I would have said linium. I don't know. Linium? No, I don't know.
It.
I know.
So does herb.
I don't know.
But they say the ages. So I don't know.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
I don't know.
Oh, we'll get to the bottom of that. It's a pretty easy one to solve.
Oh my God.
The Crown, IT Crowd.
God. What do I do with you? I mean, it's a real cross for me between Transparent and Glow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One, because I was born in the 80s, and the I think having a Patti Smith soundtrack,
mm-hmm.
that would change my life. I'm okay. just walking down the street.
This is great. You're really just giving, you're just leading me into every next category. Right. It's very convenient.
And then, of course, Transparent, the cause. I adore Jill Soloway.
Right.
and every haircut she has expired.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Yep, yep.
I don't
Understood.
Know. I think they're going to have to go tiesies on that.
Okay. I guess I'm going to tie those. And then the next one is three soundtracks. These are could be classical, could be contemporary, singer-songwriter, huge band, whatever, from any era that that in your course of a day, the sort of spontaneously composing and accompanied by like a new version. It's not just like, oh, the Rolling Stones, this song. It's never heard before, but it's sort of tailored to what's going on with you and whatever ambiance you want that to bring into your day.
I definitely think I would love to do, I would love to see, and I intend to use this in, I'm also developing something based on my first book, Holes Live Through This, because I'm such a big Riot Girl 90s.
Yeah. So do you want your own Hole soundtrack?
Oh yeah.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Do you want me to throw Patti Smith in there?
Sure.
Great.
Yes.
Then you just have one more.
Carrie Bradshaw as well. I mean, really, I just think Slater Kinney is amazing.
Yeah.
So I guess.
Brownstein. I think Carrie Bradshaw is from.
Oh, did I say Carrie Bradshaw?
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. Carrie Brownstein.
Because of Sex and the City.
Yes. Carrie Brownstein.
Okay, I'm putting Slater Kinney on here.
I don't know where that came from. I wasn't even thinking about Sex and the City. Maybe I'm always thinking about Sex and the City. Maybe I'm, it's always like an undercurrent.
I look forward to you being haunted by that one moment yes. of our conversation. Slater Kinney. Okay, great. Next category is three talents that you wake up with tomorrow morning. You sort of have perfected without the practice.
Ooh. How to magically remove any stray chin hair.
Okay, great. Great.
Sans tweezers.
Great. Great. I love that that's a talent.
I have very low expectations for talent. I gotta keep up shooting low. As one of my favorite writers, Richard Grizzard, would say, shoot low, boys. They're riding Shetland ponies. Okay, that's a talent. What's another talent? To grow melanin.
Great.
Because then I would fear cancer less.
Mm-hmm. Understood and agreed heartily. Heartily.
God, these are just shitty talents.
Oh, they're great. Please.
And entirely selfish.
Please.
Ones. I got to pick something else. I got to pick something that's a little bit less narcissistic. I feel. It's another talent. I would love as a writer to know when I feel like I'm still figuring out, and I would love to be able to be talented enough to know when I've hit the bottom of the barrel, if that makes sense. Like I always am striving to be as to write only write things that would get me disowned.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think everything else is just a Hallmark card. It's just superficial conversation. But I don't ever know if I'm ranting or revealing.
Mm.
And I don't.
So when you say bottom of the barrel, you mean like that you've dug deep enough, opposed to like bottom of the barrel when you're like, well, this is really the bottom of the barrel. Like this is the bad yeah. pickle.
Well, maybe both, man. Yeah. Like, is this deep enough to say anything?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Boy, that's a lot of pressure.
Without. Yeah. Just ranting at people.
Mm.
I don't know what, you know.
That makes sense.
So
that makes sense.
Where the floor is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I got it. I think that's great. And then final category is, well, I guess I got to put it in here. I don't know that I've ever skipped it, which is three foods that are in this reality, maybe not bad for, not great for you or in excess, that make you sick or you have an allergy, anything like that. Or too hard to get a hold of quickly, in this other world, you can have it at the snap of a finger in perpetuity with zero, negative ramifications.
Mac and cheese.
Great.
I'm very allergic to cow's milk.
Great. Me too. Great. Okay.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, gluten is a far bigger problem for me,
oh,
but I
okay.
definitely have abdominal distress when I
have you always had that?
I don't know is the answer to that. No, I mean, in the sense that I used to eat like nothing but bread and cereal and stuff. And then at a certain point, it just stopped being a thing.
Me too. I thought this one was like 32.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if I'm going to suddenly change in a dramatic way, I want to like grow giant tits. Uh-huh. Like if that
I don't want that.
No, not really. I want giant tits. Yeah. It would just be nice to have really nice tits for like a day.
Yeah.
You know, like having a penis for a week. Mm-hmm. It would just be nice to be able to pee in a different way for sure. 7 days.
I would just spend the whole time jerking off. But anyway.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. Mac and cheese is the first.
Mac and cheese. I also love buffalo chicken pizza.
Great.
Also with the cheese issue.
Mm-hmm.
Anything dark chocolate,
great.
Which obviously has less milk in it than milk chocolate, but it's just so deeply, I mean, it's good for you, and yet it's bad for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what this is for. Okay. You know, I just do like a little spiral here. So you just, for this part, you just tell me when to stop fairly quickly, I guess.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this, do some minor calculations, and come back with your 100% guaranteed fictitious MASH future.
I'm scared.
All right, here we go. This is very exciting. Now, I guess mansion, apartment, shack, and house are, of course, built into the MASH process, but then I didn't really place you in a specific area. Like, I didn't ask where your vacation home would be or anything on this round. So I'm going to place your vacation home inside the show or movie that you like spending time, because that way you actually have a residence that you can retire to.
Great.
In this case, it happens to be that you have a mansion in The Crown.
What?
So that that's kind of extraordinary and wonderful. Wow. I want you to know that you can relax, have a wonderful time there. Feel free to entertain if you'd like. If you'd like to have, like, I know you're working on that project with Toni Morrison. and so if you want to go ahead and have her over there, there's probably a wonderful writing salon that you two can hang out in. I know that there's plenty of room for Sally Ride to come over and stay with you for as long as you or she would like. I know that you serve up a mean, spontaneous, and healthy mac and cheese for yourself and others. And when you are working on stuff, you also can be joined by an original soundtrack from Sleater-Kinney. You absolutely know when you're working on these projects that you've sort of reached the depths that you are hoping for, and that there's a quality to it that stretches beyond your fear of ranting. And then when you want to travel back and sort of experience moments in others' lives and in history, you can see who is this? Toby Fields' appearance on Jack Paar. And you can also watch Mr. Rogers testify before Congress. So that is an outstanding MASH future. I want to congratulate you and applaud you.
I think I could die happy if all of those things happen.
I bet you'll die happy anyway, but I am very pleased with these results. Anna, thank you so much for doing the podcast. I felt like this was the perfect first woman back after my Boys of Summer series, because you are sort of standing in for all women, not just yourself. And I can't say enough good things about the girl on the show. So find it in all its forms. I will continue to give you updates about that as well. And in the meantime, people can buy the book. Mm-hmm. Where can they find you if they need to?
I'm always on, you know, I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Rebel Debutante, the 501c3 educational documentary thing that I have is online, but I'm going to be on CNN's History of Comedy next season.
Nice.
So they can catch me there.
Great.
I gave a salon talk a week or two ago that they can see.
Great.
You know, lots of stuff. But yes, the book is available wherever books are sold.
Okay.
But please go to indiebound.org if you possibly can.
Indiebound.org.
Your local independent bookstore.
Oh, great. Indiebound.org, guys. Indiebound.org.
Not that Barnes & Noble isn't great, but it's just support local.
Why not? Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Okay. And that wraps up the podcast. I don't know why I said that like I was ending a news segment or Inside Edition, but I am so glad to have had you on. And guys, I'm glad to be back doing Ladies for the remainder of the year up till next summer. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Thank you.